Good morning. My name is Norman Davis, and I'm here to read for you the Decatur Herald and Review for October 5th, 2015. Let's get started right off. Home Depot reaches out to help. And this is written by Dave Fope, the lead news service writer. In Sullivan, the Mattoon Home Depot store helped the Sullivan American Legion get the money it needed for improvements to his Legion Hall. To top that off, store workers pitched in to help with the work itself. Volunteers from the store and the Legion were at the hall Monday to install new lighting and ceiling tiles purchased with a grant from the Home Depot Foundation. And, last month, new carpet was installed also with the grant money. The National Home Depot Foundation likes to work on projects with veterans groups, store representative Shelley Eddington said at the hall Monday. That's especially true for those that help other organizations, she said. This is a great project for us, Eddington said. We're here for the entire community. American Legion board member Mike Keown said the organization regularly uses its hall for school activities, scout meetings, blood drives, and other events. The $9,300 grant first covered the purchase and installation of carpet for the hall's lounge and offices, work that took place last month. The people came in here and were amazed with it, Cowan said. The grant money was also used for lighting and ceiling materials, which Eddington said should result in energy savings for the Legion. The new carpet will also be a safety improvement, Cowan said. He said that after the Legion board learned about the grant program, they decided that what work could be done with the grant money. Eddington said a Home Depot store had to be a partner in the grant application, and the grant was awarded in August. On Monday, 7 store employees worked with 8 to 10 Legion members to install the lighting and ceiling tile. Our second story, Job Fair Set Stage for Future Success, written by Chris Luzvardi, who is an H&R staff writer. In Decatur, Christopher Butler was considering his options Monday after he graduates from Eisenhower High School. Butler, a senior, had more to consider after attending a Pathway to Building Trades Apprenticeship Information Fair at the Mrs. K. Community Center in Decatur. Butler said an apprenticeship training program might be of interest, but he didn't know how much about it until having the opportunity to talk with representatives of various unions, including painters, sheet metal, iron workers, laborers, and plumbers during the event. I had no idea until today, Butler said. I'd like to do something that is hands-on. We're going to need more people to do those jobs. The number of apprenticeships offered depends on how much work and is anticipated to be available, said Joe Riley, the president of Decatur Building and Construction Trade Council. Riley said that they will look for students prepared to do what's expected from them, including being on time and presenting themselves well. We want the best candidates, Riley said. We touch a lot on that in the first week before we get into the work. Many people don't realize that all of what's involved in the different trades, and Riley said the laborers alone offer a range from concrete to asphalt and asbestos abatement. State Representative Sue Shearer, Democrat Decatur, helped sponsor the event along with State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat Bunker Hill. Other sponsors include the NAACP Decatur Branch and the Faith Coalition for the Common Good. Shearer hopes that attendees could see that good-paying jobs with benefits are available in the community. Sitting behind a desk isn't for everybody, Shearer said. They all have different choices. It's good exposure to all the unions here. The students from Eisenhower were invited to attend the event, said Ed Walton, the school's industrial technology instructor. Walton would like to give more students from both Eisenhower and MacArthur similar opportunities to learn about career possibilities. It's helping the kids get a start, Walton said. They don't always realize that there are good jobs in Decatur. Establishing the expectations for those in the programs is important, said Jason Keller, Illinois AFL-CIO legislative director. For a contractor, time is money, he said. We are trying to teach them that as we want them to succeed. Keller said participants in the apprenticeship show programs are paid, meaning that they can feel some financial security while being trained and come away with support for finding future employment. Our next story includes some controversy. The Aldi project opposition aired. This is written by Allison Petty, who is also an H&R staff writer. In Decatur, the residents continued to object Monday in advance of a Decatur City Council vote on whether to rezone land that could become a new Aldi store on the city's north side. Four neighbors of the 1.88-acre site near the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51 voiced concerns about traffic and safety. The council will consider the matter at its October 19th meeting, which will be held in the Decatur Civic Center Theater to accommodate what is expected to be a large crowd. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf promised that the residents that the council takes the matter very seriously. It's really the hardest type of decision any council has to make. It is trying to balance the neighborhood issues versus development, she said. Under the plan, Aldi would close its store on Pershing Road and attempt to sell that building. At 18,000 square feet, the new store would be roughly 3,000 square feet larger. Aldi representatives said that the store wants to locate its new store on the north side of town. Ed Flynn, an attorney representing the developers, told the Decatur Plan Commission last month that Forsyth officials had reiterated that community's interest in the project. Neighbors have strenuously objected to the proposal at several public meetings since it was announced. Resident Mike Dawson said that he was concerned that the plan would involve turning a parking lane into a traffic lane, putting sidewalk within inches of cars traveling by. "It's just going to be a terrible situation," he said. "I can't think of a better word than a quagmire." Julie Bresnan, whose house is across the street from the proposed development, asked the council to visit the area before voting, just to see what's really going on before you make your decision in 2 weeks, she said. In other business, the council amended city code related to liquor sales downtown. In the rest of the city, businesses that primarily sell alcohol are not allowed within 500 feet of churches or schools. City staff recommended reducing the distance to 100 feet in the downtown area. Councilman Bill Fabers made a motion to postpone the vote, saying he thought churches and schools should be consulted. No one seconded the motion, and the five other council members voted in favor of the change. Our next story, the headline reads, Key Crossing Healthcare Dates. Crossing Healthcare, formerly CHIC, has changed a lot since the health provider was established almost 50 years ago. In 1970, Torrance Park Citizens Committee, the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation, and South Central Illinois Health Planning Council joined to seek solutions on access to health care for low-income residents. In July of 1972, a community health improvement center opened at 840 North Morgan Street. 6 months later, it was moved to a larger location at 360 East Grand Avenue due to heavy demand. In 1983, CHIC became certified to receive federal funding under Public Health Services Act and was designated as a federally qualified health center. The funds allowed CHIC to increase its services. In 2013, CHIC's governing board found the rented clinic space at 2905 North Main Street was not large enough to meet the needs of more than 32,000 residents needing care. Work begins on plans for a new center. In April 2014, CHIC opens a clinic in Decatur Memorial Hospital to serve walk-in urgent care patients. In December 2014, CHIC breaks ground in the Wabash Crossing neighborhood and announces a name change to Crossing Healthcare. In September 14th, Crossing moves its new home, the Schrott Community Health Center, at 230 East Central Avenue. Our next story is related to that. Crossing Healthcare, busy and getting busier. And we have a photograph of the nurses and people who do the check-ins. And from left, Nurse Renee Woolen, Nurse Practitioner Kathy Trustner, Nurse Christine King, and Care Coordinator Becky Neon work at the Women's Healthcare Center at the new Crossing Healthcare building. This is written by Emily Steele, who is a staff writer. In Decatur, every half hour, a bus pulls up at the new Crossing Healthcare and patients pile out. The phone lines ring with more than 600 calls a day. While Crossing, formerly CHIC, was able to serve 14,000 patients at its old location, an estimated 30,000 to 34,000 Macon County low-income residents are eligible for services. They're on track to have 17,000 patients by the end of the year and 20,000 next year. "We're getting 30 to 50 new adult patient applications a week," said Dr. Dana Ray, Crossing's chief medical officer. "That's on top of 10 to 15 children and up to 25 newborns." "We admit about half the babies born in Macon County," said Executive Director Tanya Andrix. After opening a state-of-the-art $6 million health center last month, Crossing's biggest barrier now is having enough doctors and nurses to fill it. Two nurse practitioners, a physician assistant, and a pediatrician have been hired, and more are being recruited. But quality is more important than quantity when it comes to medical providers and support staff. We have a group of providers who want to work for Crossing Healthcare because they want to work for this group of patients. The mission for our organization is their personal mission as well. That's why they're able to provide compassionate care. Crossing received a $304,000 grant through the Affordable Health Care Act last month to help increase access to health care services. That money will be used to hire more providers. Another $87,000 grant will allow them to create a position to manage quality of care. It came at a very good time for us, Andrick said. Each provider works out of 3 of the 58 exam rooms to keep a steady stream of patients moving through. The center offers prenatal, pediatric, and adult health services, as well as behavioral health counseling for relationship problems or substance abuse, laboratory services for blood work, STD testing, and pregnancy tests, as well as regular physicals, immunizations, and treatment for chronic and acute conditions. Savannah Dozier came in for her first appointment at the new site shortly after it opened. She said it was easier to schedule her appointment. "It's great. It's quite an improvement," she said. Dozier held a small pager. Instead of having names announced in the public waiting area, a violation of privacy, the pager buzzed when it was Dozier's turn to be seen. In-house pharmacy services and radiology will be available later this fall. Crossing dietitian Allison Raya leads the diabetes education program that was recently certified through the American Diabetes Association. A group of patients is also participating in National Diabetes Study through the University of Chicago. This goes way beyond basic medical care, Riata said. Having a variety of services centered on one location makes it easier to overcome some of the barriers of poverty, such as transportation. We're fulfilling our mission to make healthcare comprehensive, Ray said. The Community Health Center was established in 1972 to provide outpatient care for residents with incomes below 200% of federally poverty guidelines. The Crossing Network includes 4 other locations besides the main campus at Heritage Behavioral Health: Oasis Day Center, a school-based health center in Urbana, and Decatur Memorial Hospital. Even with all the recent growth, Crossing is looking ahead. "There's always more to be done," Ray said. Every year, Crossing officials assess the needs of Macon County and look at what role they can play to improve the health care in other areas such as drug addiction, STI rates, child abuse, or obesity. As a recognized health center, Crossing has access to funding other agencies may not, and can work with other community partners in specific areas. An open house for the community with tours and refreshments will be from 1 to 5 p.m. Wednesday, October 7th. Medical providers are invited to attend from 5 to 6:30 p.m. We have some rather sad news in our next story. Former Lakeland College president dies. In Mattoon, Robert Webb, a member of the Eastern Illinois University Board of Trustees and former president of Lakeland College, has died at age 87. Webb had been an Eastern board member since 2004. His longtime career in education included service in Harville, Shelbyville, and Raymond. Webb became vice president of administration at Lakeland in 1967, and in 1972 became the president. He served in that post until 1984. Webb subsequently served as the vice president and chairman of the board of Johnston Supermarkets, Incorporated, in Shelbyville from 1984 to 2000. He has served as president of numerous professional and community service organizations such as Mattoon and Shelbyville Rotary Clubs, Illinois Community College Presidents, and the Mattoon Association of Commerce. Webb received his Bachelor of Science degree from Illinois State University and both of his Master of Administration and doctoral degrees from the University of Illinois. Webb chaired a committee in 2008 that explored whether Mattoon should switch to a city manager form of government. He also served as an official of the Mattoon Area Family YMCA when it was deciding on relocation in 2005. Webb had served in the Coles County Board and was president of the East Central Illinois Development Corporation. He also chaired a committee to devise long-term plan for Mattoon in 1999. Webb, a Democrat, had run for the Illinois General Assembly, losing to Mike Weaver. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the Schilling Funeral Home in Mattoon. Our next story, Middle School Students See Career Choices, written by Valerie Hills, an H&R staff writer. Decatur, middle school may seem a little early for considering career choices, but actually it's the perfect time. The goal of this program is to really expose our students to all the healthcare-related jobs, said Ashley Granted, Extended Learning Coordinator for Decatur Schools. You hear about doctors and nurses, but there's so many other jobs available in the healthcare industry. Last year, the district piloted the Pathways to Prosperity program, placing high school seniors in internships with several area businesses, notably the hospitals. Many more businesses have signed up for the program this year and has been renamed Inspired Futures. More than 50 internships will be available this year, and adding the middle school component, Granted said, will further the district's goal of preparing students for college and career from an early age. It's important to expose the students as early as you can, Granted said. Our district has always been partnering with Richland Community College and Millikan University to provide course pathways so that they can get into high school, meeting with the guidance counselors, and they can look at our course pathways and say through our Inspired Futures and Career Counseling components, they already do the self-interest inventory, so they find out early on what they're interested in. Rather than wait until junior or senior year in high school to figure that out, Granted said, students can enter high school knowing whether they should take a lot of science and math courses, for example, if healthcare is going to be their career field. Ashley Patton, human resource recruiter for Decatur Memorial Hospital, said staff members are already lined up to visit classes and talk about jobs that students might not realize exist. Dave Overlot, our executive director for radiology, will be going to Garfield and talk about the different nuclear medicines, radiology-type positions, Patton said. I know he's really excited. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital has created themes for each month, said Denise Smith, director of People Services, to highlight the variety of careers. Topics cover the healthcare spectrum from sports medicine to cardiology to oncology and even sleep medicine center. Decatur has six middle schools, counting the 4K through 8 buildings, and those were divided between the two hospitals. Decatur Memorial will cover Thomas Jefferson Middle School, Johns Hill Magnet School, and Garfield Montessori School, while St. Mary's will work with Stephen Decatur Middle School, Dennis School, and Hope Academy. Sessions begin this month. Healthcare professionals will offer presentations, activities, pep talks, and games to help students explore careers and discover their interests. And talking about careers, EIU looks to boost student recruitment. In Charleston, written by Jared Jarman, lead news service writer, in Charleston, even with lingering problems affecting Eastern Illinois University, its president maintained an air of optimism as he pushed for a focus on admissions and marketing. President David Glassman announced in his State of the University address last week that a big focus for him is to intensify the university's recruiting efforts by putting a sharper focus on admissions and marketing. At this point, I am reviewing options for relocation of additional funding to our student marketing and admissions divisions, Glassman said. Marketing efforts that are tied to student recruitment will get first priority. Currently, the marketing department runs off $700,000 annually. Many universities place 1% of the overall budget into marketing. If that were the case for Eastern, the marketing department would be working with $2 million. We just had to do more with less, said Christy Kilgore, Assistant Director of Marketing and Creative Services. Kilgore said there are a multitude of things that extra funding would allow them to do. State Faculty Senate Chairman Jemmy Robertson said he thinks utilizing the faculty more in recruiting would be highly beneficial. I feel like EIU students and EIU faculty can be very valuable recruiting tools, but there is virtually no funds available right now, Robertson said. Chris Dearth, Director of Admissions, said this potential increase could make substantial differences in Eastern's recruitment success. Marketing and admissions are really what drive our revenue, Dearth said. Dearth said officials have been working more heavily with local high schools to interest those students in coming to Eastern. We are intensifying our focus in the local area, Dearth said. We have always recruited this area. We just may not have been as aggressive as we should have been in the past. EIU leaders are increasing the on-site admissions programs with local schools within an hour to an hour and a half so that high school students see the campus. The director said Effingham is one place they have tried to be more aggressive with that than in the past. Outside of the local areas, Eastern has focused largely on where applications are coming from, which include the Chicago and St. Louis. Along with that, they have been homing in on sites where there might not be a large amount of applications, but there are many college-eligible students. He said the university's entire plan revolves around moving students through the process, which starts with them getting on campus. We think if we can get them on campus, we have a better chance to enroll those students, Dirth said. And now for something completely different. Garden Has Roots to the Past, written by Tony Reed, an H&R staff writer, Decatur. In the sweet garden of childhood memory, Craig Wark holds on to the taste of his salad days. I remember going out as a kid and getting sweet peas out of the garden, Wark said. I just split open the pod and, oh, nature's candy. The Decatur man is now too busy working and raising a family to cultivate a vegetable garden of his own, but if you can't go home again, you can always take a walk in someone else's garden. And so Warwick and his 5-year-old son Gabriel took the opportunity of a sunny and warm fall Sunday afternoon to visit the Heirloom Garden Open House at Rock Springs Conservation Area. The garden's memories go back a lot further, recreating the plants that took and a look at a circa 1860s vegetable plot next to the Homestead Prairie Farm. Dad looked on with a smile as the volunteer master gardeners who work with the soil introduced his son to such vegetables exotica as okra, that taste similar to green tomatoes when fried, and which stand more than 6 feet tall. I love to bring him out here so he can appreciate nature, Warwick said. And he does pay attention. He wants to know. There's much to learn in the Heirloom Garden, and an Heirloom Garden herb garden nearby. More than 20 varieties of vegetables alone are cultivated without the aid of chemicals, and using heirloom seeds free of modern hybridization, all grown just the way our frontier ancestors grew them. Yields are surprisingly good, with some 380 pounds of produce having been pulled out of the garden this year. It's all donated to Decatur area food pantries, as well as feeding animals at the Scoville Zoo, and the master gardeners have mastered some interesting non-chemical ways to grow their harvest by fending off ravenous wild beasts like deer. The Heritage Garden is surrounded by a small fence topped with tall poles that have multiple strings stretched between them. From the strings hang oddities like gourds and corn cobs with feathers attached to give them wings. The feathers make everything twist and turn in the breeze. Master Gardener Clarence Josephson said all that movement is enough to confuse and spook the deer. I think the deer end up thinking the fence is high as the strings, Josephson said. And the deer have not bothered the garden in the past 2 years, so it does seem to work. Our next story deals with Lake Decatur. Lake Decatur, the Dredge Report, written by Allison Petty, who is also a staff writer for the Herald and Review. Decatur, recent good weather cleared up the opportunity for work to increase storage capacity for the sediment dredge from Lake Decatur. Workers from Terra Contracting Services Incorporated had lost as many as 150 days from rain and wet weather since the start of the project last year. At the end of August, it was estimated that its efforts could extend into 2016. But improved conditions allowed them to catch up, and the work is now 75% done, said Jerry Stevens, an engineering services coordinator for the city's water management department. Now that the weather has turned better, and they've gotten a lot of sunny days lately, they can move a lot of dirt. The project involves raising the barriers or berms around a 523-acre site in Oakley, and the heavy trucks can't maneuver in wet, muddy conditions. The basin needs greater capacity to hold the sediment being pumped from the lake by the city's contractor, Great Lakes Dredge and Dock. Dredging work hit a small snag last week as an electrical failure stopped the dredging operations for a few days. In general, though, the project is proceeding on schedule, Stevens said. Great Lakes workers have removed 2,147,730 cubic yards of material from Lake Decatur since the project began in late October last year. One cubic yard is equal to about 200 gallons of material. The $91 million project is expected to increase the lake's capacity by about 30%, officials have said. In 2015, the totals of 1,789,729 cubic yards, and the month of September saw the removal of 301,940 cubic yards. Stevens said Great Lakes currently employs 19 people from Macon or the surrounding counties, and 12 who are not, and all but two of Terra's 18 employees are local. Our next story, a Decatur man takes motorized bikes to the next level. And we have a picture of Jim Irvin, spends his time creating motorized bicycles. Some of his creations are gaining a reputation for speed on the racetracks. He is assisted in the building process by friends Dylan Astransky left and Jeremy Flynn in the middle. And so we have a picture of a black bike with skull on it and guys working on it. This is written by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer. Decatur. When it comes to ranking bravery, there are the merely courageous, and then there are those who enjoy accelerating to more than 60 miles an hour on a motorized bicycle. Saying it's fun doesn't even begin to describe it, says Jim Irvin, a Decatur entrepreneur and fast bike lover who runs a thriving performance business out of his backyard workshop. It puts a grin on your face, he says. If that kind of fearless performance also flips your kickstand, the 36-year-old Irvin is the mechanical guru who can put your pedal to the metal, as it were. He builds motorized bicycles that range from the mild 25-mile-per-hour everyday transport to racing models designed for the track. As with everything else mankind has ever managed to strap an engine onto, motorized bicycles have developed their own racing hierarchy, and Irvin sits tall in the saddle as one of its high priests. This is a first in the industry, a 5-cubic-centimeter combustion chamber, says Irvin, holding up a tiny modified 2-stroke engine cylinder head that he's reworked with his magic. A cylinder head with a 5cc capacity is a big deal performance-wise in the world of fast bikes. You can marry that with an Irwin modified carburation system, an Irvin balanced crankshaft, and an Irvin tuned exhaust, and on for a power plant that will smoke your rivals down the track. I can build them from extremely mild to insanely ridiculously modified, he says of his engines. I build race engines and ship them to Florida, Texas, California, all over. People know about me because my bikes show up at races and dominate. I go to races in St. Louis, for example, and those guys hate me because they can't touch me. I make them look ridiculous. Irwin doesn't see the point of modesty soft-pedaling his vocabulary or his talents. A semi-truck driver in his day job who recently survived a nasty collision with a train, he says life is too short to be shy about his bespoke engine tailoring abilities. He works alongside two younger friends, Jeremy Flynn, 25, and Dylan Astramsky, 18, who are learning from the master. Both men vouch for his wicked ways with a wrench and the euphoria that flows from it. Oh man, it's a rush, said Flynn, who just got back from a quick demonstration of one of the racing Velociraptor bikes. He explains the feeling of speed on a bicycle is intense, and there is also the sensation of childhood dreams realized, of finally being zipped along by a bike you don't have to pedal. It's a bicycle with an engine, man, he adds. Who wouldn't jump on a bicycle and not have to pedal it to get where they need to go? Irwin says he got into motorized bikes more than 8 years ago after noticing them and writing them off as dumb, but finally succumbing to buying himself one. He soon slipped into a motorized bike addiction and began messing with stock imported engines sold at various sites online so he could coax ever more speed out of them. Ever since I was a little kid, about age 10, I've liked working with engines to make them faster, recalls Irvin. It's a thrill that never gets old. By his early teens, he was already an expert at making everyday and normally slow mechanically propelled objects get up and boogie, and at age 13 had managed to hot rod a riding lawnmower that could hit 35 miles an hour. Mowing his way over an accelerated love of souped-up bicycles just seemed a natural shortcut. I've always been the one who always makes things go faster, he said. I build speed. And that brings us to the conclusion of the part one of our reading, and we will be back after a short break. Again, this is Norman Davis, and I have been reading to you from the Herald and Review for October 5th, 2015.